Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Blue Hair Dave with Sean Carden and our special guest, my very good friend Shane Paul, and he is our first guest we've ever had on here for an interview. And I want to give you a little breakdown of his excellent resume of his journey through life. He is a retired major in the Army National Guard of 25 years, a Bronze Star recipient in Afghanistan. He was the nighttime battle captain for the emergency center the day after 9/11. He served during Hurricane Katrina as a humanitarian and won the Humanitarian Service Medal. He currently owns and runs 7 Jack in the Box restaurants franchise, the fast food chain. And before that, he was VP of operations for Jack in the Box and oversaw $2 billion worth of business and had 7,000 employees underneath him. He's worked in both entrepreneurial and corporate chains in the restaurant world. And so here's Shane. How's it going?
Excited to be here. My first ever podcast.
First podcast. All
right. Yeah, I've been on TV. I've done interviews and stuff, but never done a pod.
Awesome. Yeah, we chose you specifically because of your because you're somebody I have a lot of respect for and you're a self-made person. Of course, there's been help along the way, like everybody gets, but you were not born with a silver spoon in your mouth, and you've really achieved a great amount of success, and but it always wasn't like that, was it?
It wasn't. You know, first, I'd like to comment on the self-made. We have a mutual friend who has self-made tattooed on his knuckles. That's when I'm really going to be self-made, when I have something like that. But, you know, it's funny. If you look at all your listeners, we probably have a lot in common. I'm 50 now, so I'm getting older. But it's funny, when I grew up in Ohio, and I tell my kids this, because we live in California, you don't understand, like, racism and all that. Like, where I grew up, black people, I'm black, also mixed. My mom's white, dad's black. Weren't allowed to date white women. So, like, blacks and whites, dude, 32 years ago, it was crazy. So it was a little different there. We grew up poor. Nobody in my family had ever been to college. I got my degree, and I was making more than anybody else in my family. So it's been an interesting journey. It really, when I look at where I'm at now, my wife and I have been married over 20 years. That's one of my major.
Congratulations.
That's a major accomplishment, all to the same woman. But when we talk about it, we have a lot right now. I'm very proud of what we have, but we earned every single thing we have.
It makes it all that much better, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Shane. So going back to your childhood, I know that kind of forges or shapes a lot of people, especially myself included. I know Dave as well. But can you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah. You know, it's one of the things I would also connect with a lot of your listeners who want to be the man or the woman one day. We didn't have money. So there are times we didn't have food.
Right.
You know, my mother was not a great mother. Many of us have mothers who weren't great mothers. You know, it's funny being married to my wife for 20 years. We have agreed, because she's had a similar background, we both have relatives who we love, but we refuse to let each other meet because it's just embarrassing. Like, your cousin just got out of jail. You don't need to meet him. I mean, it's just not going to go well. Let's just let it go.
Yes, we all have those.
Yeah, so yeah. What I would say, you know, because a lot of people say, Shane, how'd you get here? And I would tell you where I'm different than some people, especially some entrepreneurs, is I believe in education. So one of the things that...
It is different, yes.
Yeah, I'm a big education guy. So when we talk about the military, one of the first times that, well, I was angry at my mom many times, but one of the first times I ever got mad at her is I was a junior in high school, and I came home, and I had a twin brother, by the way. He died of cancer. That's another Debbie Downer moment. We'll skip that for now. But we came home, and no one in my family had ever been to college, so she signed us up for the National Guard, and it was a special program. So between my junior and senior year of high school, I went to basic training. And then I graduated high school, and I went to advanced individual training, which teaches you a specialty. I was a water purification expert, number 2 of my class, bitches. So I was a water purification expert. And then to help pay for 60% of my college, I would not have been able to get, and I got the GI Bill, if it hadn't been for that. But I was very angry with her. I didn't want to join the military. But it's one of the shaping factors of my life. You say, how did I get here? It really was. I did the military to get the education. And the rest flowed.
So that helped facilitate you getting the education.
Oh, we would have never. Yeah. Hell, I mean, like anybody who's listening now, I paid those damn student loans that I did still have for like 10, 15 years.
Okay.
I had to pay those for a long time. So, but again, I'm an education guy. I ended up getting my undergrad, and I worked for 2 years. I got my master's degree in finance, And it really led to a lot of big corporate jobs that got me where I'm at today.
So going back on the education, I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs I know kind of had that kind of bull head rush, take charge, you know, kind of mentality, which is great. But as you're saying, I know the education, how do you know, where to start? How do you know where to jump in? How do you know what's worth it, I guess?
Well, you know, so I'll start with the end in mind. You know, Blanchard always says that, start with the end in mind. And it's interesting because we're going to talk about how did I get 7 Jack in the Box restaurants, right, and I wasn't rich. We'll get there eventually. Yeah. But the word I thought about when I was going to come talk to you guys today is credibility. And it's funny when you deal with people who, you know, I had to deal with the banks and we had to get a ton of money. And when you have an MBA in finance, it gives you that credibility. I had the work experience of 20 years, credibility. So one of the things about education, whether we like it or not, there are some assholes out there that unless you have a degree, you don't have that credibility. And I hate to be so shallow to think that's the only reason you get a degree. Mm-hmm. I do think it teaches you a broad range of things you wouldn't know otherwise. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm a fan of education. Mm-hmm. We'll say how to start. Mm-hmm. Whether it's community college or four-year college, you got to start somewhere.
Now, can I ask you a question? Did you ever get discouraged with some of the like prerequisite classes they make you take? So, if you have a mentality, you know what you want, you know where the end game is, but now they make you jump through all these different hoops. Now, is it worth it?
If I might just jump in for a second, I think, and Shane might back this up, the idea of college isn't necessarily to be a vocational school. It's to make a better rounded person with better reasoning skills and overall knowledge of many subjects, and that's why prerequisites exist. Most everything you learn is going to be useless until you get into an advanced degree. But you don't go to college for a vocation. That's vocational school. You would learn a trade or something. College is just to make more rounded people that understand subjects to a degree that's a little bit more sophisticated than the average person.
And you know, it's funny because, again, nobody in my family ever took education seriously. So to what you're saying, Sean, again, I can't believe I'm successful today with such a bad background. You're bringing out all the skeletons. My high school GPA was like a 2.6. My undergrad, I think, was like a 2.9, 2.8. Oh. So I never really studied.
Did anybody ever ask your grades?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, well, my MBA.
Well, no, but after that, did they ask your grade when you graduated from the MBA?
When I got my first job,
they still gave you the MBA with the 2.7?
When I got my first job, I was like a 3.0.
What'd you do to get that grade?
C's get degrees.
I was like a 3.01, and I got the job, so I blew off the last two. That's how I dropped down last two quarters. That's why I dropped to like a 2.9.
So when you got right out of college or out of the MBA, they actually looked at your grades to qualify for something?
And so we're clear. The MBA, and to your point, Sean, and this was confident, I'll just be honest, I'm pretty smart. So the education thing really helped a lot, even though I never paid attention. So when I got to MBA, I actually studied.
Right.
And I had a 3.78.
Okay.
On a 4 scale.
It's in the crank.
Still not the best ever. There's someone better, but 3.78. This guy. I didn't even put any other GPA.
But did
there.
The jobs ever ask for your grade?
Oh yeah, they want to know.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I've always been saying, look, nobody ever asks. So no, when you nobody have, ever asked me, but I was a sociology major, and they figure that's useless anyway. So
where I got a point in my career where MBA was preferred. So when they won, and that's probably my last 4 positions I had as I moved up across a couple companies. So when they won an MBA, they want to know your GPA.
So that's the equivalent of like when you become a doctor and they're like, oh, you graduated from Dr. Zeus's Guadalajara School of semi-quackery medicine? Or is it like, you know, Johns Hopkins?
They want to know your GPA to show how you applied yourself. We got to be clear. My wife to this day makes fun of where I got my MBA because I went to historically black college. And, like, you know, they have the 50 best MBA programs. Then they have the top 300. I don't think we're on any list where I went. And I love it. It's Florida A&M University. It's a historically black college. I go at the white side of my family. So back to Sean, the things that I had to face when I was a kid. I go at the white side of my family. We didn't know any black relatives. So I was, like, in my 20s. Shout out, Dad. I know you now. You're still alive. He's in Atlanta, where all my other black friends are. But I wanted to go to historically black college just to know my roots. So it helped me just be more well-rounded.
So you were like the jerk, but opposite.
Something like that, okay.
Or some of our listeners might be too young to know the movie The Jerk. It's Steve Martin. And he's a white kid who grows up with a black family and doesn't realize it.
Yeah. So
even when he's older, I don't think he even realized it, right?
But to put it all together, the education truly is one of the key. Military was another one, but education was one of the key things that got me where I'm at today. I would not have what I have had I not went and got my MBA. End of story.
All right. Yeah, and a lot of entrepreneurial things. I think the reason why a lot of people that are into the entrepreneurial vein of things, they kind of fall into it because they don't. You don't have another choice. If you don't have the educational requisite, right, you're limited to what you can do, and it's mostly sales or start your own thing.
You got to get your hustle game on.
You have to hustle because you don't have the credibility, so you have to gain it yourself through a different means. And I think that's kind of what happens, right?
That's
so,
very
so
true.
It's funny absolutely when you say that, because I am going to be, I've only been an entrepreneur now, I can't even say it right, for about 15 months of corporate America. I'm going to be stunning at my hustle game, because really, it's funny, I evolved in my career. When you're working at these, I worked for a lot of big restaurant chains, McDonald's, Burger King, Jack in the Box, and you're either running restaurants directly, and we call that direct P&L responsibility. You're hiring and firing people. You know, it's like the mafia. They want to kick up this money. You got to turn in the money every month. Or you're consulting. So I got to a point where I was consulting entrepreneurs all the time. Over the last 20 years, probably 12 of my 22 years, was all consulting entrepreneurs. So now that I am one, I know exactly. I know what all the guys who failed did, and I'm not going to be that guy.
Oh, yeah, because you saw the other side of what worked, what didn't. And you came up with corporate level, C-level type of job structures, and that was your ladder in business.
And every job I had from McDonald's to Burger King and Jack in the Box, when you were a franchisee and you didn't do well, one of my roles was to put you out of business. Okay. We had to help you exit the business.
There you go. So you know all that. And it's interesting. So you, like you said, last 15 months, you've been an entrepreneur now. So newly being an entrepreneur, 15 months in.
Can I interrupt you? Yeah. And killing it.
And killing it. Oh, yeah. Well, you were like up like 14% or something crazy.
One month. You only as good as your last P&L. But yeah, there was 1 month I was up 13.6.
That's crazy in restaurant world. What's a good month is what, 2, 3, 4?
Well, the brand reported they were up 0.1 for that quarter.
Well, there you go. So you just kicked the crap out of everybody else. Yeah. So, but now 15 months in, what are you happier as an entrepreneur?
For the record, that 13.6 was last month.
What?
That I comped the 13.6 up in sales.
Oh.
So yeah. I was actually going against my own numbers of being up like 4% the year before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So are you happier now that you're an entrepreneur and an owner? Or is it less frustrating? What's the difference between the two worlds?
Well, there's always stress, right? Mm-hmm. I have the ability to control. If somebody gets on my nerves, I cannot fire them. I don't have to do this. It's my company. So, you know, it's funny because I assumed running 7 restaurants every day, I'd be making Jumbo Jacks. That's what, if you're not familiar with Jack in the Box, it's like a Whopper or the Quarter Pounder for the other guys. Ours is called Jumbo Jacks. Jack. Yeah, Jumbo Jacks.
I'm a big man.
I don't make Jumbo Jacks. You know, I got people for that. When you're the boss, and you know, I have 250 employees now. So my biggest thing is about setting the vision, the strategy, and the culture, right? And it's also interacting with corporate. I have partners, interacting with the partners. So, you know, when you're the entrepreneur running the business, it's really about setting how you want the business to go and then holding people accountable.
Now, as a young entrepreneur, do you have any advice or anyone starting out, what would you give them?
Well, there's really three things. I don't want to talk really long, but I put it into three
things.
That's
why you're here. We're gonna pick your how many years of business is it?
22 years in the restaurant industry.
Okay, so you have a lot of experience.
We
want to
share
with people,
secrets.
But just in business in general, because I'm guessing the same attitudes, behaviors, achieve. It's really our program is because it's success layers. It's about success. You know, you could be an athlete and be successful. You could be a restaurateur and be successful.
I mean, you know what I think too. Every successful person kind of lives by a code or some kind of ethos or what. So what is your code?
Yeah, what's your ethos? What's on your shield?
It's about the people. It really is about the people. You know, typically when people have bought Jack in the Box or even other restaurant brands, you lose a lot of the managers and you look at the turnover. So I didn't lose any of my restaurant managers when I bought the restaurants. And it's funny because you'll read in the industry today about unemployment so low and people can't hire good people. You know, 3 of my 4 restaurants, one person had to hire one person. His name was Charlie. Another one had to hire 2 and another one had to hire 0 in the last 4, 5, 6 months. We just don't have turnover. So when you treat people right and you set the right culture, then you don't have the turnover. We got people. The only reason I'm going to lose some people now is I can't grow fast enough. I'm actually working on a secret deal to buy additional restaurants from another brand, but I can't grow fast enough to give the talent we're developing opportunities to grow.
Amazing.
Wow. So yeah, we have one of the best turnovers in Jack in the Box. We rack and stack. So one of the things we have at Jack in the Box is they have what they call a rack and stack of all the franchisees. So when I started, I was actually at 85 out of 110, and I just made it to number 6. So I still have 5 guys to beat. But we were able to move it up there. So that's really one of the things is the people and the training. The other thing I would say is the credibility you bring to the game. So I got a quick story to tell.
Okay.
So I ran $2 billion. I wanted to run it all. They didn't see it. I wasn't the guy. So I think, you know, for the listeners out there, what's important to understand, you're not going to win every time. You know that old term, how to make lemons into lemonade, right? Mm-hmm. So I could have just said, oh, my God, and quit and did another job or done something. And I was with my boss. I reported to the president. And I said, hey, guys, be a franchisee. And I'm like, do you know how much that cost? I was like, yeah, I do. Because I had already done all the secret deals. I knew the pricing and all that. That was part of my job. He said, well, do you have the money? I was like, no. He said, where are you going to get it? I said, and for the listeners, this is very key. Money doesn't matter. It's about getting the deal. We can always find the money, but you got to go out and chase your dream. We'll work out the details along the way. So she said, hey, if you find the money, we'll get you the deal. Next week, I have a couple of partners, and one of my partners has been with Jack in the Box. They're the longest current existing franchisee of Jack in the Box of 52 years. And then her son, who's one of my other partners, has been in 32 years. And we happen to be at an Angels game. I'm not an Angels fan, but we're at an Angels game. And we're leaving. And, you know, it's just one of those things. He was actually taking me back to my hotel. We were to the game. He's going to drive me home, even though he's the franchisee and I'm the corporate guy. That's how it rolled, right? And we're walking on. I said, hey, you helped Tim get a deal. How did that work? And he told me. I said, well, can I have the same deal? And he said, well, I got a couple questions. I said, okay. He's like, well, where are the restaurants at? I said, I don't know. I'm hoping they're going to be in San Diego. I live in San Diego, but I don't know. We're going to sell restaurants for Jack, and these weren't for sale, but I saw all the deals, so I know there's some that would be good in San Diego. And he said, well, how many? I said, well, I don't know. It could be maybe up to 12, might be only 5. He said, well, okay, how much do you need? I said, I don't know. Worst case, if you look at the best ones they could give me, I'd need about $14 million. So he's like, you don't know where the restaurants are, you don't know how many there are, and you need us to get you $14 million. And I was like, yes. And he looked at me and said, we're in.
Now that, to me, just blows me away somewhat.
But that's where credibility comes in. They knew. Okay.
They knew you're a smart guy ready to handle the job.
When you can find somebody who says everything that dude just said and we're in, it's not about that moment. It's about everything you did to get to that
point. Well, I guess, you know, kinda,
credibility.
Right.
Credibility.
And also kind of too, the point that Dave was making before, you'll never know till you ask, you know? Because if you don't ask,
About chasing that dream.
Yeah, most people don't ask. Yeah. Or if they do ask, they're asking the wrong stuff. Like, they'll ask for help on something that they should be able to do themselves.
Right.
And then you don't want to deal with that person afterwards because if they don't have the motivation to type in GOOGLE.com and figure something out, then you're like, well, when they ask the big stuff, you're like, well, no, because you know that person's not going to do what it takes. But in your situation, you know, your ask was, it was the big ask. And they were like, where have you been going my whole life? Sure, honey.
Well, it goes even better. So a month later, my boss asked me, he's like, hey, whatever happened to that friend? Because I just made a mistake at work, which was really, I got in an issue with another VP. So she was pissed about it. She's like, whatever happened to that franchise thing? I think she wanted to get rid of me. And and I was like, well, I got the money. So that's the other thing about it. You know, you never want to be the stalker, right? So You told me if I get the money, you'll give me a deal. I got the money. I never said a word. Mm-hmm. So you finally came back to me and said, hey, where are we at with this? I was like, I got the money. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And 6 weeks from that day, I was a franchisee of Jack in the Box.
Boom.
And the first deal they gave me wasn't that great. If I had taken it, I'd probably be bankrupt today. So I went back and we negotiated. At one point, I said, we're not doing the deal. I can't do it. So I was going to be without a job because we're already like 2 months in that they're looking at replacing me. So I had they're already looking at a replacement. So I would have been without a job, no deal, and I would have been screwed. I was remember sitting on my couch talking to my wife. And I'll never forget what my wife said. She's like, fuck these guys. You know what? We've been in tough times together. As long as we have each other, we're going to be fine. So
that's sweet.
Yeah. So we, yada, yada, yada. They came back with another deal. The bank gave us a thing. I'm actually looking at another deal right now. And it's amazing because the bank already told us he'll give us all the money again. We're set. We've got the bankers loaded. I talked to the people for the deal yesterday. I can't tell who it is, she called me, and we're negotiating another deal. So maybe I'll get to come back in a few more months and be success story number two, because now I have like 15 restaurants.
More, wow.
A couple brands. It'll be exciting.
So for somebody who doesn't have the credibility yet, like what would be things that they need to do big picture wise? Like, you know,
I mean, the first thing you're going to say is obviously get the education. So,
well, I'm an education guy, right?
Right.
I think the other thing is nothing comes for free. You had to work
absolutely
for it.
Absolutely. No, so free lunch. I look at,
you know, you guys know Blue Hair Dave and Big Sean, and both of them in a couple of different areas. And I don't know if you guys talk about yourself, so I'll talk about you for a second. Both of you have worked years to get what you have. No rest, no break, and now you guys got what you got, right? And I think that's the number one thing. If you think that you're going to make it and just sort of, you know, fake your way and not try that hard, didn't do the education, never really got any work experience, and all of a sudden you're going to be a millionaire, guess what? That has happened before. You probably should start playing the lottery. You're going to hit that sooner. I mean, yeah. Just to be honest, right?
You need to be drugged through the mud. In order, that's just the way it works.
Well, they talk about Bill Gates. Like, well, Bill Gates never finished college. Mm-hmm. He was a genius.
Yeah, I was going to say he's the smartest fucker around.
He was a genius, and he quit college because it made more sense for him to quit because he was making millions of dollars already. So almost all these stories I always hear, they're like, these guys quit college. Well, if you're making $5, $10 million back when that was something still, you know what I mean? Like, I always say that, like, people are like, oh, he's a millionaire or something. Or, this guy's a millionaire. Well, 20 years ago, a millionaire was a freaking millionaire. Now it's, you live in San Diego and a millionaire is like, oh, okay, so
about what you need.
You need some financial assistance still. You know, and that sounds crazy, but it just depends on, you live in Manhattan and you're a million. You can't be a millionaire and live in Manhattan. You have to be a 10 millionaire to live in Manhattan.
Well, you even think, have you ever heard of the singer Meghan Trainor?
Yeah.
She was going to Berklee School of Music. She's like 21, 22. Mm-hmm. She quit. Because she said, I'm more talented than these guys. Mm-hmm. So in that case, it's like Bill Gates. She's a genius. She actually was more talented than them. Mm-hmm. Didn't actually get formally trained at Berklee School. Went on to become multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
And still, so early in her career, is going to be a huge, right?
Yeah. Well, fun fact, she probably could have stayed in school 2 more years and done the same thing.
Maybe. So back to Sean's point, what do you do? So the first thing is, you got to be willing to work. You got to get some of the fundamentals. If you're 18 and listen to this, unless you're a genius or you have some idea, and you might, that no one else has had, then you got to start thinking about, let's set a realistic goal, right? And then you got to say, what do I want to be? What do I want to do? And that's why a lot of people get tripped up on this, because they don't fully understand. You know, sometimes you got to take that risk. Like, I look at Dave, and he's willing to teach people to do what he knows how to do.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And he taught you too, right, Sean?
Oh, he taught me, yeah.
Dave's willing to...
personal business, my training business, my online business, everything blown up because of Dave.
Right. So he's willing to teach people how to do it. But if you don't have a goal and you're not willing to take a risk and step out and then work for it, you're never going to make it. So hopefully I answered your question, Sean.
Yeah. And then can I even ask further, what would you... If you were to start over from square one again, you were at zero, you had nothing behind you, where would you go? Where would you start out?
Like I said, man, that's easy. I
would you go to junior college? You'd enroll yourself in a junior college? If I'm at zero and I'm listening to this in my car and I'm like, damn, I don't have anything. I'm living on mom's couch. What can I do? Where should I go now?
You realize I'm harsh on a couple of things. I'm just going to say
it hard.
Okay.
Tough love.
I'm not an online guy. I'm more, you got to go and show up and be in class. So some people like online. I said go online. In California, they recently did first 2 years of community college are free. So one of the things I hate, and I'm sorry to use the word hate, I hate when I talk to people like, yeah, I'm taking a class this semester. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck. It's going to take you like fucking 6 years.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're banking on that.
But you meet
people,
because
they're afraid to fail, so they'd rather stay in college for 15 years.
Yeah.
So they don't actually have to step out into the cruel world.
Or at mom's house, you know.
Yeah. And so that's on purpose. That's something we talk about is people, they don't want to take, not even a leap, it's just a step, because they're afraid of fail. They're so afraid of failure that they'll do anything they can to extend like the cocoon or the womb around them.
So, and my friend Dave doesn't even know this. So you want to talk about taking a leap. I got my undergrad degree. I was working 2 years. I was making more than anybody in my family except one aunt who was in union. She was making a lot of money. I quit my job and I moved from Indiana at the time down. I've lived in like 10 states, by the way. But I moved to Florida to go full time and get my MBA. My grandpa had to give me $500. I remember my rent. I lived in the ghetto. Like, women be like, oh, I want to get with Shane Paul. But they wouldn't even come. Like, well, you know, you got crack dealers there. So I would have to go to their house. They wouldn't come to my apartment. My rent was only $300. And I remember going to the landlord and saying, hey, I know I owe you $300 from last month, but I have half of this month. And I'll never forget my landlord saying, okay, just so we're clear, if you didn't pay me last month and you have $150 for this month, that's $150 towards last month. We don't forget last month. You actually owe me $600. And now you're saying, I just need a couple more weeks, man. I don't have it right now. And that's what the military did help give me some of that money.
Can I bring up the next point? I would say, too, every successful person has or close to hit rock bottom. Has that happened?
I'm not a rock bottom guy.
You've always just been on a high horse smashing.
Well, doing the reset. So I quit everything and got my MBA. And I'll never forget my first apartment. We had roaches. I'll never forget. I was going home for Christmas.
This is my first house without roaches.
Yeah, I know, right? Boric acid, for those who are really poor, you know, boric acid just burns the legs off those fuckers. They're wonderful. But I remember, and there's another story. I remember going home for Christmas and had a bunch of drug dealers. And I had it was a cheap ass piece of radio and CD player, for those who remember CD players. But it was worth like $300, and I had a TV, and they knew I had it. So I'll never forget going to get 40s, and I knock on their door, and there was like six of them there. I had like A40s, and I sat down with, I'd never been in the apartment. The haze, I can see it right now, the haze of weed smoke in the end. I don't do drugs. Because of the military, you get drug tested, so I really don't do drugs. But the haze of weed smoke in the air, and we all opened the 40s, and literally one of them was like, why the fuck are you here? I was like, look, I'm going to go away for Christmas. You guys know I'm a student. I don't have shit. Please make sure no one breaks into my apartment. And if anybody's going to break in, it's going to be those fuckers, right? But I was like, please. And we drank the 40. We hung out while they got high as shit. I think I got a contact high. I left. I came back. All my shit was still in my apartment. So you talk about rock bottom. It's not that I hit rock bottom, but I realized, reset. I did what realized. It takes to get here. Right. So,
but you crossed the point in your mind where you said, enough.
I should have a pen and write it on my knuckles. Self-made, baby. Because that's a self-made deal, right?
Yeah, and people have different rock bottoms. Like, if you grow up in a family and you're going to inherit a bunch of money, and you know your rock bottom might be, I might get kicked out of my apartment and I have to go move back in with my parents. You know what I mean? That might be somebody's rock bottom. Like, they're not going to die or go homeless or anything. Their rock bottom is I have to work 40 hours a week. And like, to somebody, that to them, that might feel like rock bottom.
Rock bottom to me.
Because, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like,
just kidding.
Like, well, if that's the case.
I can't just go play.
I can't
go play tennis all day. I actually have to get a job. Like, that might feel like rock bottom to them. Like the girl like the USC.
Well, God bless you, have an awesome life. Yeah,
like,
that was
she has to go to class. That's her rock bottom. Like, it's, you know, just to her at least for a while, that might wake her up to, I don't, probably not. But,
well, you know, it's funny when you talk about rock bottom. Even though I got the partners, I had to put my house up as part of the deal because we got a lot of. So I owe millions of dollars. So you talk about rock bottom, I don't have a choice at this point.
So do you still owe?
Hell yes. Okay. Dude, it takes like 17 years to pay that back.
Good fucking grief.
Well, it didn't end up being 14. It was cheaper than that. Okay. That was a range. But I owe millions of dollars, so I don't have a choice right now. Either I make this work, or I could lose my house, everything I own.
I read something that was really cool, and it kind of hit my mind. It said, money is a tool. Do you agree with that?
Yes, it should not be the goal.
No, yeah, I agree.
So I worked for McDonald's one time, and they did this huge study about African-American employees, of which I was one. So they had a special training thing. And it's funny, one of the things I took from that, if you're talking about lessons learned, shout out to all my minority and underprivileged friends out there. So one of the things they did is they learned that minorities aim for money. And nothing against white people, but the white people in the study aimed for power.
I didn't.
Well, you can get power with money.
Well, arguably, if you have the power, you get the money. If you're making money, you may not have the power.
Well, not necessarily, because
don't argue with the McDonald's study.
Baby. I would agree.
Well, I'm gonna now. The study was on what they were looking for, not what causes what. But you could be a gang member and be broke and still have a lot of power
in a very limited area, a very limited scope.
Well, everybody's power is limited,
no one's really looking up to that gang member either.
You could be a corporate guy. You have no power in that gang. But you have power in the corporate world, which is totally
anyways,
different.
Their whole thing is get the power, which is back to that credibility. Don't worry about trying to make the dollar or the money. Worry about making the impact, getting the credibility.
Yeah. So, no dead air. We're going to let this run through and see what happens, because I think we should put a whole hour dedicated to this. So what are some other things, like regrets, as far as you might have had? Are there any, like, regrets?
Oh, I have a ton of regrets.
Well, name some.
You know, if I can go with what my wife says about regrets, and I think some people have regrets and it holds them back. And, you know, again, I've heard my wife give this answer like 50 times. You know, she has a lot of regrets, but she looks at where she's at today. And if you let the regrets hold you back and what could have been, if you're happy and pleased on where you're at today, you got to let go of the regrets.
Right.
You know, it's like guilt. Some people worry about guilt. Guilt is one of the most overrated emotions out there. Either you should have done it or you didn't. Shouldn't have. Either you learn from it or you don't.
And it doesn't matter. You know, some people have these bad pasts, but if you made it and you're successful, that changes. I mean,
don't let it hold you back, baby.
Absolutely.
Everybody's got some crazy.
Everyone's got some dirt in the closet for sure.
Well, let's just say, I look at my life now. I probably should have been arrested at least 30 or 40 times.
Because you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you pee outside all the time.
Well, yeah. That's probably the least of the arrests I should have done. that is why, by the way, I will never run for political office. I am one of the most inspirational people you ever met. God forbid one of those 20 or 40, 50, 60 times I should have been arrested come up. It would bar me.
Nowadays, it doesn't matter anyway.
And you don't know what the arrests were going to be for. So when you talk about regrets, you know, it's tough. Regrets are things I wish I would have done differently, but I learned from my wife I'm where I'm at today. So for the listeners out there, one of the things I would tell you is understand I've made 1,000 mistakes. And it's not about the regrets. It's not about the mistakes. It's about the choices you make. I've made 5, maybe 6, because I count being a franchisee now and jumping for it. I grabbed it. I took it. I made that decision. I own it. That's number 6. But I've really made 6 correct decisions in my life. I've made thousands of mistakes. So if you're listening to this podcast, one of the things you got to say, what is the correct decision you're going to make tomorrow? And don't worry about the regret and the mistakes, because you're going to make more mistakes even if you make a good decision. You're going to have regret of what you could have done, but let's start the path to doing the right things. That would be my message.
Yeah, I agree. You know what we forgot to mention in your intro is that you are, I know you were pretty active with, like, what, Junior Achievement and a couple other clubs. You even did some Shark Tank stuff with entrepreneurs and products.
Yeah, I've done like the local Shark Tank thing, but there's a guy who holds it, so I've probably evaluated like 50 different companies. I'm actually going to be interviewing next week. I was on the board of Junior Achievement for San Diego. This one's more of a bootstrap, but they're going to interview me to be join on another charity, and it's called Home Start.
Is that the camp one, the guy we talked about at the commerce thing?
No, this is a different one. It's really for homeless women who have children. They help them find housing, and they also work with the women who are abused. And I'm just a sucker for helping kids, dude. Just, you know, it's not their fault.
No.
So I'm going to – I already wrote the first check. I have to give it on Monday because when you're on a – by the way, so another insight. I don't know if I should be saying this. Surprisingly
– You definitely should.
If you're going to be on a charity, a lot of people think it's a big deal to be on a board of director. Half the time, it's about the money. They need board of directors. Like when I was on Junior Achievement.
For money raising, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, we had like 50, and it was a $25,000 give or get. So if you couldn't donate $25,000 or get somebody to donate on your behalf $25,000 every year, you couldn't be on the board. Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, you had to come to the board meetings. And then on top of that, you had to contribute. And then on top of that, you had to volunteer and do all this other stuff.
Is there a bright side?
You're helping change the world.
And the other bright side, I think, with boards is eventually you get on a paid board somewhere that's not a charity. You could do that too, or it is a charity.
Well, I mean,
I do it to,
if it's to help the world.
So for Home Start, there's, I think, something like 4,000. So that's much more because I'm paying it. The other Jack in the Box paid my other 25 when I was doing that. I was on the board there for like 6 years. So this one I have to pay out of my own pocket. So I'm going to spend $4,000 to get on the board. And my goal is to help homeless women with children find housing.
That's beautiful, man.
My goal is help women who are getting beat up and abused get out of those situations. And this charity is going to allow me to help do that.
That's awesome.
And still keep my day job.
That's awesome.
And I have to go to they take 2 months off, so they told me I have to go to 10 meetings a year and then volunteer for the other stuff.
Okay.
Including the stuff like this podcast, talking about Home Start and what they do. If you've never heard of it, it's a San Diego charity. So this helps.
The are there home starts in other cities that people listening to this can? Okay.
This is only San Diego. If you said, hey.
Well, we have a huge population of homeless people in San Diego because
it's crazy,
the weather, and I don't know if there's anything else. I'm not sure why San Diego is such a huge. I think it's a combination of weather, the large military presence. Maybe
is there a
cost of housing?
You know, for those of you out there,
the most obvious one,
who don't live in San Diego, one of the things they just started is there's probably like 12 to 20 of them now. They actually have these places, dude, where it's a parking lot where you can park overnight.
I have a couple friends who've actually
And I have one behind one of my restaurants. They are my customers, but they'll park there.
It closes at a certain time and opens.
Yeah, so you have to be in by like 8 or 10. There's a security guard there. They'll have a hot, well, like a, you know. Like a not a mobile home, but like a minivan thing that has showers in it, so you could take a shower, use the restroom, you sleep in your car, and then you wake up the next day and go to work.
Right.
And really, because San Diego is so expensive to live, there are people who, you know, anybody can be homeless at any time. Mm-hmm. To hit Sean's rock bottom, I've never been homeless, but anybody can be homeless any time. And when that happens, if you have a car, you just need to earn or save up 2 or 3 months of rent, or first month, last month down payment, right? We all have
In San Diego, there's people probably making $3,000-$4,000 a month that are homeless in their cars, because that's not really, you know, you'd have to get like a bunch of roommates, and it's
Hard.
Yeah, but $2,500, you're probably homeless.
And that's regret. You talk about regret. So, those guys have regret.
You know, it's funny because I was just talking to Shane earlier about that, where the pain of regret and not putting the work in first is far, far more painful than the struggle to be successful, you know, to put in the work and actually, you know, get to where you are. Because I have some friends who, you know, just, I'm sure everyone does, just dicked around, partied, drugs, you know, which is fine. Not saying fine, man, whatever. But get your work done, you know, do your shit, get it done, and then make stuff happen. Because just sitting around with no ambition, I think that's the word.
Well, you know what I'll say, because the three of us have this in common, even though I'm older than you guys. I'll make a statement, and you guys will say, yeah, that applies to me. I tell, because people all the time say, you know, this started, it was odd for me. It probably started about 15 years ago, even when I was still poor as shit. But, hey, Mr. Paul, hey, Mr. Shane, how can I be a millionaire? How do I get rich like you? How do I make it like you? Because I've been on an upward trajectory for a couple decades now. And I always told them the same thing. And it's hard. I always assumed I was going to be a millionaire. Because I was going
to
work hard.
That's funny. I always say that too. I'm like, when I'm rich. I don't say if. Yeah. I always I say when.
If you can't love yourself, no one's going
to
love you.
No matter what I was doing, whether I was 15 or in a band, or whether I was in my 20s and not doing jack shit. Well, still in a band. But like, no matter what I was doing, there was always like a third of my brain in the back of my head that was like, this is just temporary, because eventually, and if I was embarrassed at any given point, I was like, I'm going to fucking show them. Yes. And that was always in my head. I always had a bit of it. I'm going to show them, or this is temporary, even maybe just dissuading my own fears. There was always something in me that said, you're going to do great things. I don't even know what it is. You're going to do something. And then when you get a certain point, you're like, well, shit, I'm not even president yet. And then you're like, then you let yourself down a little, but it depends on what your goal is.
Right.
And a lot of people don't have that, because somewhere, it was probably my mom or somebody told me that I could do anything I wanted to do, and I was silly enough to believe them, and actually it stuck in my head.
Have you ever seen Space Jam? Good grief.
No, I've never seen Space Jam.
Well, and the other thing I have done that you guys would agree with, I've worked on average, and this is a regret in a way, because I really wasn't the best husband or father at times, but I've worked on average about 70 hours a week or more for about 20 years now. So everything I've gotten, I probably worked too hard. I missed a lot of things, but it got me where I'm, you know, there's a great book out there, what got you here won't get you there. I don't want to work 70 hours the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I want to enjoy life more. I want to make more money so I can spend that money. But the other thing that got me here that actually is a regret is I worked 70 hours a week. I worked my ass off. It's a regret because I missed my health. I need to lose a little weight.
Yeah, you can always get money back. You can't get time back.
Yeah, so I do a little different. But I mean, for the people out there, to assume you're going to work 20 hours a week and make it, you are naive.
There might be weeks where you only have to work 20, yeah, especially with marketing.
And that's the only stuff you'll see from people.
Because that's one of the things I talk about is like, I have free time. I work, I'm at home, and Shane can attest to this because we live across the street from each other. You know, it's like, I'm home in the middle of the day or whatever. I can go to the gym.
Or you're working out with me.
Or I'm working out. And so I do have freedom, but there's also, like lately, this past week, I've been doing like 16-hour days of work. But with online marketing, it shows up pretty quick. Within a week, I can see the difference in the money that's coming in. And so I've got that flexibility because of what I do for a job, that I can take breaks. But ultimately, if it averages out, I probably do work a bunch. And if you don't feed the plant, it dies eventually. So there's different levels.
Well, this is where I have to hype Blue Hair Dave up, because it's funny. So you got a guy on here who's making it rich, probably one of the, for many of you on, I'm not going to lie, I'm confident too, but for many of you on the podcast, one of the more successful people you'd ever hope to meet.
100%.
But I live across the street from Dave, and he does online marketing. So what the fuck am I not doing? Right? I mean, so Dave will tell you all this stuff, and you have all this great Instagram feed. I don't have an Instagram.
Oh, I have a terrible Instagram feed, but.
But you have all these things you
can do. But your inbox has my emails.
All I do is I work 70 hours a week. I had to kick a homeless guy out yesterday. I mean, so what am I not doing? Dave lives across the street, and we live with rich people. It's really nice, I got to tell you.
Yeah, it's funny because sometimes you kind of feel weird living in the neighborhood, because I feel like everybody's, even though I'm older, like I feel like there's people younger in my block, but I feel like they're an adult and I'm not. Like I'm like, because the cable guy once, like I've had that happen recently, and I might not look exactly my age, but I definitely look old enough to own a home. And like they're like, is the owner home? Yeah. I'm like, what am I? Because I'm wearing like gym shorts and my hair's all messed up. It's 2 o'clock. I still haven't showered. And, like they're like,
it's 2 o'clock.
Is your dad here?
It's 2 o'clock.
It's my house, motherfucker.
You just woke up because you had a rager the night before.
I actually heard some podcast or something, and the guy was like, and he's like, he's actually a fitness dude, but he was like a SEAL, and he was like, and he was talking to, maybe it was Joe Rogan. He's like, yeah, well, I have whiskey and a cigar every night. And he's like, really, you can do that? And he's like, yeah, me and my wife, the old lady, it's what we do. He's like, every night, Saturday night, but every morning, the next day is Monday morning. And so there's no, but you're up, you're still up at 6 a.m. the next day, man, or what you do.
But another reason you want to be Blue Hair Dave is all that being said, he is living life to the hilt. I've probably been here with him and Big Sean sometimes, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning on like a fucking Tuesday.
Good times.
Right? I mean, so it is what it is.
On our Sunday, Sundays in the pool, poolside Sundays.
I've probably been at Dave's backyard Sundays probably 100 times now over the last five, mm-hmm. 6 years. Probably more.
Yeah, when it gets warm, that's where you'll find me on Sundays.
I can't be floating around, though. That's for sure.
I float around.
My kids learned how to swim in his pool.
Yeah. So enough about that stuff. So let's move on to some other stuff that we have written down here about mistakes, like regrets and mistakes are a little bit different. So what are some of the mistakes that you may have made or that you would recommend people avoid that maybe you were able to avoid?
There's one that just jumps out. I'm cutting you off. I'm sorry. My wife, it pisses her off. I have one thing I just don't do well, and I'm a sucker. I trust too much. I wish I had.
That's because you have a big heart, though.
I do. But, there's sometimes I've trusted people in my career. I trusted things. You know, if I give advice out there to anybody, take your time, research, make sure you know what you're getting into. Don't trust everybody. I've trusted personally. I've trusted professionally. And that's a mistake I've made. I shouldn't do that. I think another mistake I've made that I have my wife. I got to give her credit. I'm the guy, this is going to be a big learning point for people on the phone, because I've used on the podcast, I've used it in my work. I'm the guy, if it's not working, then maybe we just need to go. So I'll change a job, I'm not afraid to quit and get a better job, da 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 da. And because my wife, she said eventually, she taught me something, and now I'm like an idiot savant. I've had this conversation like 200 times with different employees that are giving this advice. She's like, you know, the reason you want to quit the job is partially your fault, or something about you, or something you need to do better. So you can quit today. You can actually get a bigger, better job and make more money. But when you go to that next job, you still have the same damn problems. So maybe you need to fix the issue you're in today. And that could be even a relationship. So you know what happens in a relationship?
Work habits, relationships, anything.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe you're a drug addict or whatever it is. So The reason they're not happy with you is because you're high all the time. Maybe if you fix that, the relationship would be better at work. Maybe you're late all the time.
Well, so, it's funny you bring that up because I just got done competing for California Strongest Man. A bunch of my friends, my buddies went out there. My dad was out, and we had a rough past, and you know, probably weren't the best of friends for the longest time, and we're super cool now. He's, you know, bringing me all his food. He's good job, son. Cool, man. We're going out to dinner, this and that. And I'm like, whoa. And then my buddy's like, dude, your dad is super cool, man. What's going on? And I'm like, yeah, man, that's because I'm doing well in life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it kind of catch 22s. Once you kind of build on success, it keep following, and everyone sees that, you know, yeah. It radiates.
Yeah, they do. They see that and they want to be a part of it. Whether they're already older, younger, or whatever, like-minded people like to collect together, or it's something you want to do. Like there's the old saying that you're the average, your income is the average of the people you hang out with the most, or something like that.
And throwing it in there, that was probably one of the coolest things ever, just to have the old man, you know, be like, good job, but son.
I think that's two lessons, right?
So that doesn't come often.
Well, that's one of those life goals almost, right?
Probably happened maybe once or twice in my life that I got that good job, son.
But once you're successful, more people are attracted. Like if I look at Big Sean, I call him Big Sean. His name's Sean, but I call him Big Sean. He's a big guy. The muscles are huge. Hey, thanks, like, he'll get chicks I'll never get.
Luckily, I have a beautiful one myself.
Well, actually, I'm hot, but I have like muscles.
Big daddy over there.
Success attracts success. And then the second point you got to remember from what we just said is, you know, if it's not going well, fix that today before you move on to the next thing. Because you're going to move on to the next thing and you're going to fail for the same reason. Fix it.
Yeah, just fix it. And there's all kinds of things. And the only way you fix it is by looking straight into the problem and being honest about it. And then not beating yourself up too much over it, because that's a recurring...
Guilt is an overrated emotion. Yeah,
don't feel guilt. Just look at it objectively, like you're a scientist, and be like, here's these two problems. We need to fix them. Let's fix them and then move on. Yeah, so you don't have to feel terrible about it.
You know, I remember when you talk about regrets and mistakes, there's been hundreds of conversations and things I shouldn't have done. Even some working relationships should have been better. It comes down to you got to fix it. You got to make it better. And then from there, you can move on.
I'm going to throw something out there too, but which everyone can probably relate to. Every mistake or, you know, big fuck up, I've learned from and I've grown from. So I wouldn't necessarily, you know, like every kid who's, and I've seen this all too often, you know, no one's gotten in a fight. No one's messed up. No one's done. Right. They've done exactly what they're on. So how do they even know? You know, how do they know that they've, you know? So I have a, you know, if you haven't messed up, if you haven't, you know, you're not even trying. You're not pulling your potential out, which, you know.
Well, they say in football, if you don't foul, then you're not, you know.
You're not going hard. Absolutely, you know. But, and that point kind of resides big time with me, especially with the kind of younger crowd, because I see it all too often where just, you know, they'll have this big old ambition, go hit one wall and quit. That's it.
You know, and I can't believe I'm telling the story, because I personally do not like Rush Limbaugh. But I'm going to talk about Rush real quick. You know, if you hear Rush Limbaugh and you read his story, he probably got fired or messed up from about 20 different jobs before he got where he's at today. So whether you agree with him or not, he's chasing his dream. There are people who look up to him. He's worth tens of millions of dollars. But he got fired like 20 times. So for the listeners out there, I think that's a key point for you. Don't regret that maybe you got fired. Don't regret that maybe you're not where you're at. The question is, what are you going to do? I mean, I don't want you to be Rush Limbaugh. It's sad enough that we have one of him. But you have an opportunity today to do something different to make tomorrow better. Are you going to do it? That's the challenge.
Are you going to put it off till tomorrow?
What do you guys think? I'll ask you guys a question. What do you think about that? You ever meet people that you just wish would listen to what you're talking about so they could, you know, change their tomorrow?
Yes. People always ask me, they go, because with the course that I have, I show everybody exactly what I'm doing and how I make money on the internet. And I've got some industry friends, guys have been around longer than me, like 20 years in the industry, that back when I was getting started, they tried to show me stuff. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And I didn't get back to it until years later. And they're like, man, you're the only guy I know, because they're like, they sign up for all kinds of stuff to learn, courses and stuff. Because that's what people do is they learn. So they're not afraid to invest in themselves about learning new stuff. It's the education. It's just, right. You can't learn what I do in a college.
Education isn't college, yeah, right? It's getting educated.
Yes, you literally can't learn what to do, how to do it. They don't teach it in school because, first of all, it changes too often. So by the time they print a textbook, the methods are different. So, and he's like, you're just showing everybody. He's like, aren't you worried? And people go, well, aren't you worried about, you know, too many people doing it? Or first of all, it's a $100 billion industry. You're not going to run out of room in the industry. There's plenty of money to be made, and it's $100 billion instead of $10 billion because people get in and make more money. And so, but I show everybody exactly what I do, and very few people actually do exactly what I tell them to do.
It's too much work, right?
Too much work, or they're like, I'm going to do this, and then there's a shortcut to this. I know there is. Or I'm going to do this. Or I'm going to hurry up and do this.
Or they just don't understand.
They don't do it. There's a huge portion of people. I'm not going to say the number, and everybody knows this, whoever has taught a course or anything, because you can see how far people get into your videos and courses. They spend about an hour, and then they're probably like, oh, I'm going to go to bed now, and then they never return to it. And the people that – I don't do this anymore. I used to give people access for free to the course if I knew them when I was just getting started with it, just get feedback. And the people who didn't pay never did anything with it for the most part. There's a few exceptions, but most of the people, like friends and family and stuff, they just, you know, they're hot and heavy.
They didn't value it.
They're hot and heavy for like 48 hours, studied it, and then just dropped off. So there's something, it's just, you know, you can show everybody everything, and still only 2 out of 100 people are going to actually attack it completely. Unless they come from a point of perspective where they're ready to go. And so lately I've had a bunch of people that are just, they're boom, they're doing it. And they just dive into it. So, yeah.
I think that's the only way to do it, too. I mean, I come from, you know, I took your course. I watched every video on that course, and I deep dove into that 6-8 hours a day, and I cranked it out. And I'm not going to lie. I hit some walls. There's a learning curve for sure. But I rewatched those videos couple times, if not more than 10 times on some of them, and you know, before it stuck, and I'm like, you know, now I get it.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I mean, everything is the same way. It's whether you're learning how to play football or baseball or weightlifting.
And some people have a bigger learning curve than
restaurants.
Others, you know?
Yeah, it depends on what it is, and everybody's got a different skill set too. There's different types of learners. People learn kinetically. Some people learn by books. It's just, it's everybody's different. But the thing is there's a, it's more, and people always say this is, oh, it's poo poo. And I used to think it was poo poo too, was the philosophical mental aspects of success or entrepreneurship or with anything. It's really just success, and success being defined as whatever you want to achieve. And some people's levels of success are different than others. But if there's anybody who's high level, just put it that way, and anything who becomes professional at anything, there's almost always the same attitude. There's no such thing as a pro athlete. Except for rare exceptions that get there without just working all the time, like on their free throws or whatever. So Shaq was terrible at free throws, but he was gifted at other things.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because I know this is supposed to be about me and inspirational people, but you have listeners out there. The average listener is trying to make a change in their life. Why don't they do it? Why don't they stick with your program if it's going to get them there? What's the number one reason?
It doesn't matter if it's what I'm teaching or anybody else's, because a lot of people, they'll just keep buying stuff and they don't enact it.
I would say it's the person itself. I mean, there's either people who do or I mean, there's people who look at courses. I was just actually talking on the phone with another guy, and he said he bought courses. I was like, how far did you go on those? He's like, well, you know, they just didn't pan out well for me. I'm like, well, I mean, chances are you buy those 10 courses. Chances are you're doing something wrong on all those 10. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's
they
fine.
Work. I'm just saying he's not employing himself.
So yeah. We're going to look at Blue Hair Dave and what he's doing or anything in life, and you're listening today, because we don't want you to necessarily, we're not trying to sell you on Blue Hair Dave. But what I would say is, if you're not happy with what you're doing and where you're at, what are you going to do? If you listen to us for almost an hour now, what are you going to do differently that's going to have the next year be different than the last? I think Dave has some solutions, but if you're really not ready to work, if you're not ready to learn, he's not going to be able to help you either.
I think people are ready to learn, and they always, people want to, and here, I'll tell a story, and people, they want to learn, but they're afraid to fail. And this is like what the book I'm putting together. It's just basically things that these are my problems. And I found that my psychological blocks are the same ones that I run into when I try to help people. And it's really just a matter of fear of failure and then finding excuses to keep failing is what you do, because people are too afraid to come to have something go bad. And the worst example is somebody that has zero ambition that never tries anything. There's a sliding scale, or he's right?
Never failed. That's the first thing I would say.
There are plenty of people that they don't do anything and they refuse to. They don't go look for a new job.
So can I ask you a crazy question?
Sure.
What do you think is more motivational to people out there, the fear of failure or the allure of success? Which is more motivational?
For me, the fear of failure tenfold over and over and over.
Because some of these guys out there, it's all about, look at my Porsche. Like, Dave has a big house,
hot wife, great
son. I mean, that's success, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was my definition of success. My definition was I wanted to be able to support my child. I wanted to have a nice, my one thing was a nice house. I wasn't never a fancy car person. Like, I'd rather have like a $15,000 muscle car that half works than a $300,000.
You have like the $80,000 truck.
Yeah, well, he makes fun of the Mercedes.
He did have the $80,000 truck. Now he drives a sucker mom.
Yeah, but I.
By the way, Sean, do you know he will not let me eat food in his Mercedes?
Oh my God.
What's up with that?
Well, I don't let Roxton eat food. You can eat food. Well, you know what? You might be just as messy as Roxton.
I took him to my jacket.
Tampons in the back.
Maybe you shouldn't be so messy in the car. I've been in your van. Shane drives a minivan.
Yeah.
So, and you're all saying, why does this guy $2 billion worth of business? He drives a minivan.
Actually, $14 million we do in sales this year.
Okay. Well, it was $2 billion, right? So,
before.
Okay, but
you were going on about the minivan.
Shane drives, what is that? 2000. What do you got there?
Can I tell the story?
Is that an Astro van parked out front?
No, I'm going to tell the story.
I'm going to be quiet. Let me hear.
Shane drives. What year is that?
2012 Toyota
Sienna. Okay, 2012 Toyota Sienna. But it's been run ragged. What is there, like 400,000 miles on that thing?
You have to throw the limited edition up in there.
It hasn't seen a car wash in probably, I don't know, since you bought it?
I wash a car, I just don't clean the inside.
Okay. The outside's been cleaned. Yeah. But the inside has not been cleaned
by the rain.
And I'm not going to say more because he won't drive me to the football games anymore if I do. But the car has not been cleaned in a long time. But there's a reason for that, because he can't drive his nice car. Because you can't drive that up, and then people will be like, why don't you pay me more money?
We bought my wife. So, hopefully my employees.
He doesn't want to look fancy when he's.
My wife a GLS 450 Mercedes. And I was supposed to have that car. She's like, you can't drive this to work. So I used to drive the other Mercedes I had. And then I started driving her minivan. And like the first day, one of my managers pulled me aside. He's like, hey, can we talk a second? I was like, what? What's going on? Like, I'm thinking she's going to quit. She's like, are we doing okay? I was like, why do you say that? It's like, well, now you're driving the minivan. Are we making money? And I'm like, well, no, I needed to haul. You know, I'm not rich. Because, you know, everybody wants to make money. Everybody wants a raise. If I'm driving a GLS 450 and like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't give you that 50-cent raise. Well, maybe if you drove a little bit nicer, less nicer car, I could have my raise.
Yeah,
there's never want that to be.
There's probably people listening to this that subscribe to that point of view. That's unfair. But when you put everything on the line, and if you are listening and you feel that way, you need an attitude adjustment, because when you put everything on the line, you deserve to spend it as you wish, and you work with what the market gives you. So,
yeah, but you know, it's funny about it. My wife was making fun of me about this last night. We're having a drink and talking with the minivan. So running restaurants, like right now, I have the whole back down. I have replacement mirrors in there. I have replacements when people like tear up the seats. It's full of restaurant shit, and it's like you can't haul restaurant stuff in a brand new Mercedes GLS 450. So she took it for that. It's perfect for what I need today. Someday I'll probably upgrade, but it wouldn't be another GLS
to the Sienna.
It'll be a newer Sienna. I'm not gonna lie, because they're so roomy. I know I sound crazy as shit right now. They're roomy in the back.
It's practical, right?
I run restaurants, you know.
I like the sedan, even though he's... listeners, if you're listening to this, please email us. support@bluehairdayplan.com or I don't even know what the email is for Success Layers.
Okay, let me...
He says because it's white. It's a white sedan. It's a Mercedes. It's just an E400 or whatever.
Okay, when my boy sells his big black Raptor, and gets a little white Mercedes. I'm asking what's going on.
He thinks it's a soccer mom. Well, it costs the same as the it costs more than the truck. But you can park the fucking thing at the store. And you can't park the truck at the store. You take four shots to get into these tiny spots. The spots in California are made for like the minis or whatever.
It's smart cars.
Yeah, it's smart cars.
For those who aspire to be rich, Blue Hair Dave, give us some education. If you're going to buy a fancy car, buy or lease?
Well, it depends on your situation, but I'd say that you lease if you can buy it off. No, well, I don't buy. Well, it depends. I go for the cheaper payment. If you can get 0% interest, then you buy. Because why wouldn't you want free money? Somebody gives you a loan for 7 years with zero interest.
Actually, that was a Toyota Sienna. We got 5 years, no interest loan.
Yeah, you take that money. You just take it because it's 0%. Like, they literally just handed you money. You pay over 7 years.
You know, by the way, to those out there, there is another piece of Sean. Good credit matters. We got the GLS. We had no money down. And we got the loan. We had to put no money down, and they give you like a $90,000 car.
I'm a 740 right now. I'm fine.
That's so credit matters. Right credit now. Score matters. Yes. No matter whether you're the admin, you're picking up the garbage, credit. There are, the higher you go, they actually check your credit score.
Can I tell everyone how I got my credit score that high?
Bring it.
And when I was 18 years old, I signed up for a Kohl's card. I bought one pair of Nike shoes.
And that was it?
One pair. And I overpaid a dollar on it. So it has a positive balance of a dollar.
Oh, that's the only card you've ever had?
Ever. Until like now. Mm-hmm. So for like, you know, 5 or 6 years, mm-hmm. I had a positive balance of a dollar. So my credit just went, bump, bump, bump. And then I finally opened up my Alaskan Airlines cards, and now I'm flying all over the world.
Gonna get that Southwest card. Free companion pass.
I'm actually a Marriott rewards card kind of
guy. I like the companion pass because you get to fly for free.
So can I tell you one other crazy thing? So if you ever become an entrepreneur, and so I'll tell my personal story. There is a Ritz-Carlton in Dana Point that costs anywhere from $690 to $890 a night. And I am like a points whore when it comes to the card. So like, dude, we have a different vendor who delivers bread to the restaurants. I put those bills on my Marriott rewards, and then I write a check to myself and pay it. So in like 4 months, I got like a 500,000 points, and it's 60,000 points to stay at the Ritz-Carlton. So for $890 a night, I'm paying 60,000 points. I just got 8 free nights at the Ritz. Use the credit. Dude, being an entrepreneur, you can put all that. Because, I run a $14 million business.
That is,
I put a lot of bills on that.
That is
free travel.
In one of my webinars, I watch that one. I think I bring that up in one or two of my, if I don't, I need to.
Free travel.
The best part is like with like, at least with internet marketing, is you have to have ad spend. But if you can make more money on the ads, that's the idea, is you spend money and then make more money. And then you scale it up. And when you scale it up, you're still spending money on these points cards. So, and the Amex Platinum and the Gold Card have different benefits depending on what you're doing.
The money back even.
Yeah. And so here's, because it's funny, because when you're broke, nobody wants to give you any money, right? And then when you start making money, they're like, here, take some fucking points. Here you go. Spend more. And then, so then you start booking things with the points. So in first class airfare, up until like a year ago, the Amex Platinum gave you half the money, half the points back. So your first class flight cost almost essentially the same as a regular flight, and it was, you're using points for it. Now they give you 33% back.
Can I sound bougie now? Any flight over any flight over 2 hours now, I can't. It has to be first class.
That is bougie. That's insulting. You're actually insulting people.
I want leg room.
Yeah, that's just terrible.
Well, I've been working 20 years, 70 hours a week, dude. Yeah.
There is a big difference. And if you can afford to do it, and especially if they're giving you 33% back like they do now with the Platinum card.
And I'm going to make a prediction. Eventually, some of these airlines are going to include happy endings. So we'll see.
Go
back to the stewardess's compartment.
In Idiocracy, you ever see that movie?
No.
Where people get stupider and stupider.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually, Starbucks becomes like...
I'll have a foam.
You get a hand job with every frappuccino or whatever. Whoa. And Fuddruckers becomes buttfuckers. Because it's like 400 years in the future.
Yeah, the chick from Saturday Night Live was like the co-star in that. It was her and the other dude.
That's a funny movie. It's one of my favorites, actually. I'm sorry about the...
That's one of your favorites, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my other favorite's Anchorman, so...
That
tells you where I'm sitting.
My wife's favorite movie of all time is Pulp Fiction.
That's a good
Fiction,
movie.
Great movie.
That's a good movie. Yeah. I like irreverent comedy.
Mine, which is sad, and I'm just going to say it, one of my favorite movies of all time.
The Notebook?
I'll give you my top two. One is Valley Girl, if you're really old.
Valley
really?
Girl?
I love that movie.
Nick Cage was in that. Yeah, it was like 17. Original.
And 16 Candles.
Really? Okay.
Oh, my Lord.
And he does.
16 Candles still rules.
I can verify that he does listen to. First Wave on Sirius XM. Yeah, it's First Wave. Yeah.
Like this is The Journey in the Shower.
That's a wise side of my story coming out right now.
that is 16 Candles. I'm like, oh.
So, side note, I know I'm going off the rails here, but since we're black, my wife is black, my kids are black, we actually let our kids listen to rap music at the age of like 7 or 8, and there's all kinds of curse words.
Join the club.
Like, we're the strictest parents, but we rationalize because we're black. This is our music. Like, we had neighbors once.
We have discussions about this.
We had neighbors okay? once in Philly, and they were Greek. I hope they don't hear this, but they were Greek. And I'll be damned, like, the dude had lived here 20 years, still didn't speak English. But when 300 came out, their kid was like 7, and they let him watch that fucking movie. Oh. Like, well, this is our heritage. Yeah. I'm like,
so nightmare. So their kid thinks that's all real now.
He's like, I'm going to be that big.
But it's your culture, right? What's good for one might not be good for the other.
I guess, yeah. Yeah. Because Italians are like
Godfather?
Well, you know what? Half of my family kind of got offended by mob movies.
Nice.
And they'd be like, oh, they're just stereotyping our people. But they also didn't consider... It's funny because they're like, they're stereotyping our people, but my Italian side is from like northern Italy. And they consider the southern Italians to be beneath them. And so it's like its own racism inside right. racism. Right. The Sicilians are not Italian. Those aren't even Italians.
They're part black anyway.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Yeah. So it's the racism creeps in because Italians are racist against other Italians.
You know what you're gonna have to do? You're gonna have to split this podcast up into part one and part two. This is a long part.
No, most podcasts will go an hour minimum to 2 hours.
We were cranking on long for a while.
And we're at right now. We're at like an hour and 20 minutes. Hour and 15 minutes.
It seems like 2 minutes. We're so interesting.
Well, you're a very interesting person to speak with. Maybe we'll have you back on again.
Yes, I like talking to Shane. Hey, Shane, can I ask you a question? When you first got your biggest lump sum of money, and I always thought about this too, because I'm like, man, when I get rich, when not if. What am I going to do with it? What's the first coolest thing that I'm going to do once I get this lump of money? I know you thought about it.
So when I got my MBA in 1995, so I was a restaurant manager at McDonald's in 1996. They put in a special program, but I got a $25,000 signing bonus. So I got a check, and I'll never forget. I had the check. So my goal was to go to the bank. Give them the check, and I wanted $5,000 cash, like stripper money, crazy, right? And
he's I like was so ones. Mad,
like they wouldn't give me. They're like, "Well, sir, for the $25,000 check, we can't give you all. There's float. It has to actually clear."
Uh-huh.
And I never knew that.
And nowadays they won't even give it to you. They're like, "We need 6 days to give you. You can't even go buy a car with cash."
So it was funny. So to Sean's point, I got the $25,000. I tried to cash the check. They wouldn't let me cash it. So it is what it is. But I used that $25,000 and I bought a house.
With $25,000?
Down payment.
Oh, okay. I was like, that's a very inexpensive
house. And the other Jack in the Box story I tell, because we were living.
Where'd you find that house?
It was in Ohio. And this is back in 95, 96.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That was, you could buy.
It was a three bedroom.
You could buy a place in Mission Beach back then for like
$400. It was a three bedroom in a great neighborhood. Like where I grew up was in the same school district. That's where I thought the rich people lived. And it was like maybe 1,600 square feet. It was 114,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a great neighborhood.
There's still spots you can, like, we're used to this, but.
Alabama.
There's lots. I mean,
South Dakota.
Yeah. I mean, Alabama, Georgia,
backwoods, Tennessee, Washington.
It's just, as long as you're outside of a city by like an hour, I think you can get houses still there.
So I got one more lesson for everybody. And, you know, it's funny. My wife, we were living in North Carolina. I was working for Burger King, and I didn't want to take Jack in the Box job. She did not want to move to California. And all my life, this is about relationships, because I'm a fan of relationships, even though 20 years, most of them happy. Actually, coming up on 21.
Wow.
Lucky 21.
Yeah, lucky number 7. So she didn't want me to take the job, so I came back to Jack and was like, I can't take the job. We don't have enough for a house. And it was the first time in my entire life, this was only like 8 years ago, that I picked her over my job. My entire career, I've always picked job over family. I don't care what she's doing, whatever it is, job matters more. She slips and falls, her back's hurt, she's bedridden. I'm still going to work, baby. That's just how I roll. So we turn down the job. Jack in the Box thinks I'm playing hard to get. They come back with a second offer because I said I have to buy a house. So they give me a signing bonus again. And it's funny because to Sean's point, you say, what did you do when you get the big money? We bought a house in California.
Oh, there you go. That's what I did.
So whenever I got big money in my life, Sean, to answer your question, we've always bought a house.
Well, I mean, that's a smart investment, but I would say...
What do you want to do?
I mean, I always thought, so at least for my own time, when I get a bunch of money, where'd you want to go? I know you wanted to travel somewhere. I know you wanted to... Or do you do that in general? Do you
so we're clear. Dave will tell you. My life is sort of blessed as it is. Like a normal, you know, going to a Lakers game in the suite. Going, you know, here.
Perks of your job, right?
Yeah, that's what I always... That's
he gets all his stuff for free.
The dinner, yeah, the
job.
Dinners, all the right, drinking, Shane,
I'm your next
date.
I'm going with you, man.
For like the last 10 years, one of the downsides and best sides was I did about 100 nights a year of travel in hotels. So I... Back to that,
like you're far away from
your
family, though, right?
What?
You're far away from your family, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's the downside.
That's the downside.
Yeah. Or it depends. It depends on how long you've been married, how crazy your kids are, and what age they are.
Well, I always say in a bad year of marriage, it probably helped to stay together. Good. If I can give you guys one personal piece of advice, people talk about marriage as if it's mythological. I would tell you, you know, it's not great every time, dude. So if you're going to stick it out, there's good years and bad years. When I was traveling, we're still married together today. We're going to be married for the rest of my living days because you make it through the bad days to get to the good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just like anything else, ups, downs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you talk about purchases, I will tell you, as we get rich, a friend of mine, I won't say his name or what he does, but he's in this industry with me. And he said something to me once recently. I say recently, it was like a year and a half ago, that changed me. It was weird. Like, it literally, I'm going to tell you guys a story, and it literally has changed how I think. And he said this line, because he's very rich right now. I now have made more money, and I'm currently making more money, than I can conceivably spend in my lifetime.
Oh, that's crazy.
Wow. I'm making more money.
That's a lot of money.
Than I can conceivably spend in my lifetime.
That's crazy.
Because that's got to be like, you got to have like,
well, the income 50, of his companies, like the hotels, million. The yeah, restaurants, yeah, all that, yeah. It's about $750 right now. What?
You look, Dave's looking. $750 million?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought, I was like, shit.
I got that now.
He'll probably start breaking a billion. But the ring he's going, he'll break. I mean, he owns golf courses, hotels. Yeah. He'll probably break a billion in revenue.
My water bill next month, maybe.
In the next 4 or 5 years. But more than, and you know, it changed me in a little bit. I'm not going to lie, because it made me realize. You know, again, to those guys out there, like, Jesus, I can't even imagine that line applying to my life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you listen to Blue Hair Dave and Big Sean. I want to have that problem. I want to have that life. So what I would just say to you, what are you going to – if there's anything I can leave you with, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to have regrets. Guilt's overrated. You have to have credibility. I believe in education. But in the end, what are you going to do with this? You just heard some inspirational shit, some great stories. What change are you going to make? That's the challenge I would give. Whether you go with Blue Hair Dave or do something different, to do nothing different after you've heard all this wisdom, you've just wasted an opportunity.
And you'll notice a chain with everything we talk about, whether it's us or our guests or a guest coming up. There's always going to be, and I found this to be the circumstances, at least in my life, is that when I'm around people who I consider successful and that I respect and look up to, there's always a common thread in there. And it's always just, you got to just take a step and keep walking no matter what happens. And don't let temporary failures become permanent, because that's your choice. And it's always the same thing. You just keep going. And there's people that just keep going. And those are the people that get to where they want to go eventually. And then there's people that quit at the first sign of any kind of trouble. Even though that's just to be expected, you're not going to hit a home run when you bat every time. No. You're going to strike out a lot. Or you're going to strike out most of the time. But eventually you get better at learning what to hit, what not to hit as a baseball
analogy.
That's
for sure.
But most people, at least half of the population, they're just on the sidelines. And they don't even realize it. Or their mindset is that life isn't a competition of some sort. But it is. Ultimately, if this was 100 years ago, you would just die. And then once there was a blanket set up for people, and that was in the 1920s and 30s, and then into the 40s and 50s, you died. If you didn't have family to support you, you just died. And now people consider they don't even consider that. So they're like, oh, life's not a competition. But it is, because you need to survive. In the wild, you die. 100 years ago, you died.
Right.
You just didn't eat and you died. And so people did whatever they could. They'd sold fruit on the streets. The 3-year-old was selling something on the streets. You'll see this in most of the world. If people don't go out there and hustle, they die. And as Americans, we kind of have this, life, everything's going to come to me. And if I rub these oils on me and think a lot, then I'm going to become wealthy and everything's cool.
I'm in a darker spot now. Like, I think as Americans, like, if you don't do everything you're saying, they don't die, they become meth addicts. Right? It's just sad.
Yeah. Well, you can have somebody that actually has money. I see your point.
That's one of the issues in our people who are failing today. And that's,
so you don't have to think about it.
Yeah, you want to numb yourself, whether it's alcohol or drugs, or even the fear of failure has you down. You're just poor. You're living on welfare. Mm-hmm. The question is, how are you going to break the cycle?
Yeah. And you'll notice character traits and characteristics of people. If you see people that are broke around you, pay attention to what they're talking about and their attitudes about things. Do the opposite. And if you're with people who are successful, maybe people that where you want to be, whatever your definition is, do what they're talking about. Maybe you're like, oh, I respect this group of people, and they're into whatever hobby it is. Well, get into that hobby.
That's huge.
It's just, whatever it is, you'll start to pick up what they're doing, and there is a difference.
Well, it's funny you say that. I have to golf like 5 times a year for charity events, even though I'm not good at golf. I own golf clubs, of course, and I've been playing golf for like 20, 30 years. I suck. I only do scrambles for those of you know what golf things mean. But, it's one of those things. If you can't have the conversation – one of the other things, when I'm giving people advice, I was talking. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm leaving. So I'm going to close on this story. We got to end sometime.
All right.
But we have my daughter's on a soccer team, so we had to do lunch today out in Oceanside, California. And the dude next to me, and I actually probably should have him on your pod. We're talking about what he does. We all just exchange stories. One guy was like, "Those two, not as important as this." But this guy says, "Well, he's Mexican." And we recently bought a chain out of bankruptcy. So we already had our retail chain that had 200 units. This other chain we bought in Mexico, which is like our Dollar General, Dollar Tree. It's like a discount store. We bought 350 units out about a year and a half ago. So it's funny. When you hear this guy's story, self-made, buying these stores, making it happen, going out and grabbing it. So if I can leave it with anything, is if I can toot my own horn, I was pretty impressive in that conversation today, because I read Business Week, I read the news, I read financial stuff all the time. So as he's talking about his industry and what he does, I was learned on the subject. So I'm tying this all back to what Blue Hair Dave was just talking about. You meet successful people. If you can't talk the language, I started with golf. But if you can't talk to them about, so he's talking about his business. Oh, I heard Dollar General is going to open 700 units. Mm-hmm. Yes, Shane, that's very impressive that you know that, because they already have 3,500. And next year or two, they're going to open 700 more. I could just see in his eyes, like, this guy's the real deal. Mm-hmm. Dude, I don't know anything about Mexico or dollar discount stores in Mexico, but I read about business because I'm a student of the game. I'm in restaurants. I'm in business.
Yeah.
So to what Dave's saying, you can make a change tomorrow. Go to Hampton Inn, go to a Hampton Inn or go to a fancy hotel, walk in the lobby. They have the papers there. No one's going to read those damn things anyways. Grab a Wall Street Journal, start reading it's about free. Business. It's free. It's 5-finger discount, right?
Yeah.
Grab a paper, sit down. You can even sit in the lobby. Mm-hmm. They have free coffee.
Yeah, go and Google.
Give it back to them if you don't want to feel guilty about taking it. I've done it a number of times. That's how I know this is a thing. But read the paper. Start being educated, because Dave's right. As you heard what we're talking about today, if you're not where you want to be, you got to start making some changes. And, maybe you don't have the money to get an education like I was talking about. Maybe you don't have the time to go to college because you got like 4 kids or a job. You're working 80 hours. But you know what? You can start educating yourself. You can start that change tomorrow. Are you going to do it?
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Sean, before we sign off?
I just wanted to ask a quick question just because it kept pondering my mind. What do you think is more important? Ambition or education?
I'm sorry to disappoint. I'm an education guy.
All right. No, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of guys are getting education in a couple of categories. You're getting it because you have to, but you're getting it. If you really see the poor, the people who come from nowhere, they're getting it because they want to go somewhere.
you have to have ambition.
Yeah.
I mean, two very, just so very we're important clear, things.
I'm just, not naive because there are people who go to college and they're dumb.
Oh, I see it all the time. Like, yeah. this guy has a master's degree. Yeah. He's working at McDonald's.
Yeah. I think you kind of have to have both in one way or the other. Your education is the hard knocks of life and you're in sales and you know how to be a salesperson, you still have to have the knowledge to do it. But without ambition, you can't do that either because you can get education. And without, if you read what book is it? Is it Outliers or one of those? What is his other book? You could be super smart, and it has nothing to do with how successful you are.
Actually, that's Malcolm Gladwell.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And he basically, his theory is you only need to be smart enough, which means if you're an imbecile, which is used to be an official term, but like if you're like slow, you might have trouble. But if you're reasonably intelligent or just smart enough, the rest is all work and ambition.
Right. You know, I deal with rich people all the time, and they don't worry about ambition or education. It's odd. They don't.
Well, what do they worry about?
Keeping the money in the family.
Huh.
Well, that's different. That's inheriting. Well, I mean, money. That's not what we're talking about.
I know. So the people listening,
unfortunately, I didn't get that.
Yeah. And some people walk around like that's a badge of honor. And to me, I'm like, that's a scarlet letter. The badge of honor is I did this on my own.
I got no respect for that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, we weren't born rich, so we might have.
I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'd like to be born.
Sorry.
I would
sneeze.
50% of the people, 23% of the people just turned off.
But what I would say, though, is...
I'm a sneeze, man. I'm sorry.
I would say to the listeners today, it's all about making a change. Are you going to do what it takes to make the change?
Yes.
We've given you a lot of stories, a lot of things you could think about. But I remember being poor. I remember being in grad school. I remember being 25, and chicks didn't want to come to my place, having roaches, dealing with drug dealers. And I worked hard.
You just weren't hot enough, player.
What?
They don't care.
No, dude. I lived in Triple T.
I've had separate experiences. Sorry.
Actually, bulldozed the places.
They don't care where you live.
Triple T apartments. Yeah, you had to be there.
When you're older, they do. But under 25,
as long as you have somewhere to go.
You didn't. You never lived a drug dealer. Well, probably did, but still. But for all those guys listening,
I've lived some dumps.
Yeah,
hell, it beats the W van up there.
And ladies, are you going to make the change? That's the bottom line. Are you going to listen, and are you going to make a change? If you do the same thing tomorrow, that's on you, dude.
That's right. Repeating the same mistakes, that's on you. All right, Shane, it's been a pleasure. Shane Paul.
Awesome, brother.
Anything you want to talk about the charity again or any other things?
I said
enough. All right.
He's going to leave his piece.
All right. And so I am Blue Hair Dave, Dave Giovacchini.
Big Sean.
And we're Success Slayers. And thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. Have a great night, people. And we'll see you in the next episode.